Is your tree looking a little bit tired? Leaves falling off, curling up, brown needles on your pine? It can be hard to diagnose a sickly tree, and treatment options are often limited. Today, the Horticulture Gang is here to help you. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Emily Woodbury, sitting in for Charity Nebbe. Today, it's Horticulture Day. Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Geron is here, as well as Laura Jesse, an entomologist at the Plant and Insect Diagnostic Clinic at Iowa State. They'll join me to help determine what's causing your tree problems. We'll talk plant and insect disease, and of course, we'll answer all of your plant and garden questions. Join us for Horticulture Day after this news. Good morning. It's Horticulture Day today on Talk of Iowa. I'm Emily Woodbury, sitting in for host Charity Nebbe. With me today are guests entomologist Laura Jesse of the Plant and Insect Diagnostic Clinic at Iowa State University. Welcome, Laura.
Hello.
And Richard Geron, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist. Hi, Richard.
Good morning.
And you guys are here to help determine what's causing our listeners' tree problems, as well as other plant and garden questions. If you have a tree that's looking a little bit weird, you notice some curling leaves, leaves falling off like it's autumn already, brown needles on your evergreen, give us a call. We'll try and diagnose your tree the best we can. You can reach us at 866-780-9100. And again, of course, we'll answer all of your plant and garden questions. Again, that number is 866-780-9100. So, Laura, you work at the diagnostic clinic at Iowa State. How does that work exactly? What can people send in?
So we're the Plant and Insect Diagnostic Clinic. So we really try to help people solve their plant problems, whether it's insect, disease, abiotic. And we can also do just identification of insects, you know, an insect that's in the yard or the house, and people send us pictures. With plants, it's usually better to have a sample, so people package up samples and put them in the mail and mail them to us.
Mm-hmm. And you can just, what I would guess, put it between a couple of pieces of clear tape, maybe? Or how do you send that in?
So it depends on what it is, and definitely it's nice to call ahead if you have any questions to find out kind of how to package it. So for an insect, it's no problem just to send it in like an old pill bottle or something like that. For plants, usually more the better. You know, if it's a herbaceous plant, even things like tomatoes and stuff, it comes through the mail best, roots and all. And oftentimes the problem's below ground too, so it's nice to get those roots. Obviously with trees, we can't send the whole tree. So, you know, some of the leaves, maybe some of the branches, and pictures oftentimes are really helpful.
And for a tree, getting a root would be really hard.
That would be.
Well, can you identify diseases or insects with photos as well?
Sometimes we can, and more so with probably the insects, especially if it's actually a photo of the insect. Diseases are harder because with diseases, there's different fungi and bacteria and things. And what we see on the tree are the symptoms of that disease. So we're seeing, you know, brown leaves or spots. But there can be oftentimes many different things that could be causing those spots. And if we have to diagnose the correct thing in order to actually apply treatment or know if there is any treatment. So plant diseases are often harder to diagnose just from photos, but it usually helps. It gives us an idea of patterns and what's going on.
What kind of questions are you getting a lot of this year?
I would say a lot of just, why is my tree not doing so well? Why are there a lot of dead branches with the conifers? You know, why are there brown needles? And those sort of questions where we're trying to kind of solve, like, what could be going wrong here for this tree or this pine tree.
Mm-hmm. Are you seeing any patterns throughout the state, you know, kind of common symptoms among people's trees?
In general, the common symptoms of stress, so we tend to just, you know, lump this all under just stress. And we sometimes will say, you know, the tree is in decline. That's kind of a polite way to say your tree is dying, because oftentimes decline is irreversible. Once we start to see, you know, many branches dying, you know, a thin canopy, you know, one or two dead branches, if the rest of the canopy looks great, is not as big a concern as if we've got an overall thinning canopy and then multiple dead branches, you know, and that's when we start to think this tree is in decline. Why it's in decline is much trickier to solve. There are some diseases and things can trigger those symptoms, but also just stress, girdling roots, drought, winter, all these things contribute to stress in trees.
Mm-hmm. And with some of the beginning of the summer has been so wet. Some areas in Iowa experience flooding. Have we seen anything related to extreme wetness? I know even now some dryness is coming in parts of the state.
Not so much this year. I would say the weather pattern for the previous maybe five or more years of wet springs and then followed by drought has probably been the hardest on the conifers, the arborvitae. Yew this year was probably the cold winter. We saw a lot of kind of winter burn. So I would say this pattern has been very hard on, you know, all the spruce and those trees.
We have this question via email. They're saying last fall in October of 2013, we lost a 10-year-old maple from a windstorm and promptly replaced it with a tree-spaded maple tree. The new tree is about 20 feet tall and was doing great until this past week when nearly half the leaves have turned orange like it's fall. We were not watering it since we had gotten so much rain this summer, but started watering it again this week since it started turning color. Is our tree just stressed from lack of water, or is this normal for a newly transplanted tree?
Well, there's a problem there. They should not be doing that at this time of year. So there's some stress, but we have no way of knowing what it is. And so what I would be doing if the ground is dry, I would be watering about every week or 10 days because the last thing it needs is additional stress from drought. So I would do that through August, September, October if it stays dry. And then basically the key is what does it do next spring? If the stress is severe enough, the part that's turning orange right now may be dead next spring. So hopefully that's not the case. But beyond watering, you probably can't do much.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose there's no way to keep a tree healthy and have orange leaves all year, right?
No.
That would be my preference.
They should be doing that. They should be doing that in October.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see early coloration, that is a big warning sign. There is a problem here.
Mm-hmm. We have this question from Kate in Des Moines. Hi, Kate. Good morning.
Hi. How's it going?
Good. What's happening to your tree?
I have a walnut tree in my backyard, and the last 2 weeks it has dropped three limbs on my driveway. It looks like the branches are all kind of droopy, but when they fall, I mean, it's still alive. Everything's green on it.
Well, typically when something like that occurs, that typically means something has weakened or damaged the branch. Maybe there's some type of decay or rotting occurring because a intact branch typically just doesn't fall to the ground. You have to have something that weakens it. So I'm guessing there's some type of decay or rot occurring, and that weakens a branch, and it can just simply fall during a storm or just even overnight.
Yeah, and that's what happened. There was no storms or anything. They just wake up in the morning, and there's a giant branch in my driveway where my car should be.
So I would look at where it broke off and see if there's some rotting or browning of the tissue. I would suspect that's the case.
Okay. And if there is rotting, would that spread throughout the whole tree? I mean, because the branches are in different areas of the tree, too.
Well, rotting occurs when you have some type of exposed wound. When you have an exposed wood or exposed wound, you can have wood decay fungi invade that wood and very slowly begin to rot it. There's nothing you can do about that. I'm not sure what caused the initial injury. It could be a squirrel chewing on a branch or whatever. So a number of things could do it. But once you have a open wound, you have the potential for wood decay.
Okay. So does that mean that the tree, if it has spread throughout the tree, does it have to come down?
No, I don't think so. It just means that maybe those branches were damaged somehow and wood decay began. It weakened the branches that were affected and they fell off.
Okay.
All right. Good luck, Kate.
Thanks.
Up next is Katie in Iowa City. Katie, you have a question about your plum tree.
Hi. Yes.
Hi. So what's going on?
I have about a three-year-old plum tree, and a few weeks ago, branches just, all the leaves on a branch started curling up and turning brown and falling off. And then it spread to the other branches. And I found holes in the tree, like an insect had burrowed in and red sap running out. And now it's spread to the entire tree. there's a few branches at the bottom that are still okay looking, but now they're starting to go. And I'm wondering if there's any way to save this tree. It looks terrible.
Okay, well, this sounds like a pretty young tree, and insects, and probably what you're describing is maybe something we call gamosis, where a lot of, you know, plums and other closely related trees, when they're stressed, they'll produce like literally kind of big wads of sap will come out and be sticky. It's sometimes that's in response to insect borers. Sometimes that's canker. Sometimes we don't find any cause. It's just stress. So,
really?
Yes, and the insects are really good about picking on stressed trees. They're plants that are healthy will have kind of an immune response to insect borers and things like that. So, and seeing exit holes, if that's what you're describing, and insect borer exit holes usually look like they're really clean, like someone just drilled right into the, you know, the tree.
They're lumpy, like there's crud around the holes, and it's just leaking sap.
It doesn't,
like blood.
Right. And with multiple branches dying and in such a young tree, it may not be salvageable at this point. At this point, it's, you know, mulch around the root zone, providing water if we don't get rain over a number of weeks, and just kind of wait and see. There's no kind of quick fix for these sort of problems.
It happened really fast, though. It's just just a few weeks.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for your call, Katie. Good luck. Up next is Tom in Cumming, Iowa. Hi, Tom.
Good morning. I have a 40-foot-plus linden tree in my backyard that, coming out of winter into spring, half of the tree, I mean vertically, the south and the west side of the tree leafed out, and the north and the east side did not. It did bud. And all the little twigs and limbs and everything are soft and pliable, but the tree has done nothing more than that since spring.
Okay. Well, the buds form actually in late summer, so they've been there since last year. So apparently that one portion has died in the intervening months. I'm not sure exactly what it would be, possibly verticillium wilt, which is a fungal disease. It's a vascular disease. And there's no cure for that. Now, that portion that hasn't leafed out, it's dead. And you have to decide, well, if half the tree is dead, do you take the whole thing down or just the half? I might be inclined to take the whole thing down if half of it's dead.
It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. With me today, our guest entomologist, Laura Jesse of the Plant and Insect Diagnostic Clinic at Iowa State, and Richard Drawn, also from Iowa State, horticulturist. We're talking about plant and insect disease and tree problems, and we want to take your plant and garden questions, any questions as well. You can join our conversation by calling us at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk, send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We'll be back in a minute. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Emily Woodbury, sitting in for host Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me I have Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Drawn and Iowa State entomologist Laura Jesse of the Plant and Insect Diagnostic Clinic. We're here talking about tree diseases, plant and insect questions, and we have a lot of callers on the line, so I'm just going to go ahead and jump right in. Here's Helen in Ames. Good morning, Helen.
Good morning. I'd like to know, I planted a rhubarb plant this spring, and now it seems to be wilting. The leaves seem to be kind of curling. Do I have a disease, or does it need some water, or what? It was wonderful.
Yeah, we had all that rain in May and June, but July has been pretty dry, so I would be watering it.
Okay.
And I would water about every week to 10 days if it doesn't rain.
Okay, sounds good, because it was just doing beautiful. All of a sudden, it looked like curly, you know, it just needed water.
Right. And a new plant, it had all that rain in May and June, didn't really have to do much. Now it's dry, so it may be under stress from a lack of water.
Sounds good. Oh, thank you so much.
Thanks, Helen.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry to cut you off there, Helen. Up next is Marcia in Ankeny. Hello.
Hello. I have perfectly wonderful cosmos plants that are about 4 feet tall that I planted in the spring, and the seeds came up. They're ferny, they're green, they're beautiful. I have maybe one or two blossoms and no buds.
How much sun do they get?
Lots. Full sun.
Okay, 6 hours or so?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
More than that.
Do you fertilize?
I haven't fertilized them. Well, a little bit on one patch. Some are at my daughter's because I transferred them, and those probably haven't been fertilized.
Okay, because two things come to mind typically. One, they're not getting enough sun, or two, they're over-fertilized. If they're over-fertilized, they tend to remain vegetative and not flower. So
I don't think they've been over-fertilized. The ones have not been fertilized at all, and the others may be from, I put fertilized plants in front of them, and it may have gone, dripped over there. But, they're like huge ferns.
Right, they're huge plants, they can be, right. Well, beyond that, I'm not sure. It has nothing to do with insects or disease, so it has to be environmental. Maybe they will with the warmer, drier weather in the next few weeks.
All right.
So, thank you. I'm ready to go down and whack them down because they're taking up too much room.
I maybe do some thinning, but I still think they might bloom in August, so I would leave some.
Thank you.
All right, thanks. This is a question coming from Zach and Ames for Laura. Hi, Zach.
Hi, yes. Last fall, I got my crabapple tree in my front yard pruned by some company I hired, and this year it seems to have developed a black mold down the branches and even down the base of the trunk. And I'm wondering, I think it's the same thing as the frog's eye mold on the leaves. And I'm just wondering if there's anything I can do about it at this point. Because I know you can put like a copper after it's been pruned, like a some sort of copper solution to prevent mold. But now that it's here, what can I do about it?
So it sounds like I think maybe two different problems. I mean, this one we probably are going to want to see maybe a picture of. So what you're talking about on the leaves is apple scab, and that's very, very common on crab apples and causes the leaves to fall prematurely, and you'll see that kind of, you know, brown, you know, lesions on the leaves. But what's on the bark and the trunk that you're describing is not that, you know, it could just be sap. One of the things we kind of worry about if there's been wounds and things is bacterial wet wood. This bacteria is very, very common in the soil and in the environment and can sometimes get into wounds and cause kind of like weeping out of the tree and sometimes kind of even frothy things. But it's kind of hard to tell. But it's definitely, it's not related, and the copper, any treatments would not do anything for any trunk problems. So I think a picture would probably be the most helpful at this point, you know, sending a picture to the Plant and Insect Diagnostic Clinic and, you know, seeing what it kind of looks like. But
yeah, it is sort of oozing from where the pruning happened and then all the way down the trunk, and it's sort of like a black, moldy, fungusy thing. I touched it and it smelled bad. But, yeah.
Yeah, that sounds a bit like the bacterial wet wood, which, there again, there's nothing to do about that. But, again, it would be kind of nice to see. And sometimes, you know, trees will do quite a bit of, you know, oozing and sap. And then other, you know, yeasts and, you know, it's great nutrient-rich, sugary. So other things will move in and be sticky, and it might not be that big a problem for the tree.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it might clear up over to next year. So, okay.
We'll definitely wait and see what it looks like next year.
Okay.
Thanks, Zach. Feel free to send that stuff in to the Iowa State Plant Insect Diagnostic Clinic. You know, Laura, Zach's question reminds me of something I've been seeing all over Iowa City. It's not black mold, but it's this kind of oozing white, almost slimy mold that is growing on lawns. I see it kind of all over grass areas around Iowa City. Do you have any idea what that could be?
So kind of different things. We could be, if it's kind of oozy white, then we're kind of looking at slime molds and some of the fungi, because, and it's with the wet weather, it's been really good. I've gotten more slime mold pictures this year than I can ever recall. So, and it won't, and it'll be kind of on anything, you know, any branches, anything low down, usually near mulch or something. But then we're also starting to see a lot of like powdery mildew. If it's like not slimy, but literally just kind of white on the surface of, you know, grass or other plants, that's probably powdery mildew.
And the slime molds typically tend to be like in a mass, maybe 6 inches in diameter, maybe a foot. They oftentimes are kind of a yellow or an orange, so they kind of really show up. But within a few days, typically they dry up into kind of a white powdery mass. So they're kind of here and then they're kind of gone. Mm-hmm. We're also seeing on grass quite a bit of rust, which is a fungal disease. And if you have rust, if you walk across the yard and look at your shoes are kind of a brownish orange. That's a fairly common fungal disease, not too serious. We typically see it in mid to late summer.
So not too serious. We don't need to worry about it too much. It's not going to ruin your lawn.
No. Typically, it shows up in mid to late summer when the grass is really not growing very well. And that's pretty typical for mid to late summer. Typically, when the grass begins to grow again in the fall, it kind of goes away by itself.
All right. Up next, we have a question from Don in Gilmore City. Good morning, Don.
Good morning.
What's your question?
I'm out on acreage, and I have some cedar trees, and the birds eat the seed, and then they sit on the fence and seed or make little trees everywhere.
Right.
Is there a good time, or can those be transplanted? Because they're all the way from about 6 inches tall up, you know, up to more mature size.
Yeah. As far as transplanting those seedlings, yes, you could do that. A good time would be April. Basically before they start to grow. And I would probably pick out plants maybe 2 or 3 feet tall, not too big, not too small. Okay. And they should be fairly easy to move at that time of year.
Okay, that's great. The birds plant them all the wrong places.
Oh, yeah, they do.
And then I've got another question. I've got a hard maple tree that's probably about 50 years old, and it's probably 30 to 40 feet tall. And it's branched out, of course, real well. Some of the branches hang down awfully bad, and I was wondering about trimming them back.
Well, you can do that now. It's okay to prune. It's okay to prune in midsummer. That's okay. You could also do it in late winter, like in late March or so, early April.
But it's got all these, the limbs don't have hardly any foliage on them until they get out to the clear outside. Should I trim them all the way back to a Y or?
Right. You typically would prune them back to a logical point, possibly where if you have a side branch, possibly back to the main branch, the bigger branch, or if it's an entire branch, maybe back to the trunk, but at some logical point where they originate.
Okay. Well, this tree had one limb that was pretty good size get damaged in a storm a couple of years ago, and it faced just about straight south. So I still got a big opening to the south. So that's partly why I haven't wanted to trim those other branches back, because I was hoping to get the tree to fill out again.
Yeah, sometimes they don't when you lose a big portion. But they don't have to be perfect, though, either. So they can only do so much.
All right. Good luck, Don. We have another maple question from Sarah in Johnston, Iowa. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
So what's going on with your maple tree?
Well, we've had a couple of trees that haven't made it in our backyard, and we just replaced one of the maples with a new maple, and the leaves are starting to turn red.
Okay. Again, a sign of stress. Was that planted this spring?
It was planted maybe in June, mid-June.
Okay. So at this point, you should still be watering. And as far as watering the tree, what I would do is, if the hose would reach, I would just go out there with the hose, take off the nozzle, turn it on real slow, and set it on the top of the root ball.
Okay.
And leave it there for maybe 10 minutes or so, and then go around the tree, maybe at 12, 3, 6, and 9, like a clock. Okay. And then I would go maybe 2 feet beyond that and do it again. Just go around it and water it nicely. And if you do that every week or 10 days, that should be sufficient. But I would definitely want to make sure that you water the root ball, because that's where most of the roots are right now, but also the surrounding soil around the root ball. And do that through August, September, October, into November if it's not raining.
Okay. I have one maybe complicating factor.
Okay.
We're thinking that our backyard where we've planted this is gets overly wet, and it's got a real clay soil.
Okay.
And the tree that was dug up had some water in it.
Mm.
And so we have been cautious about watering, but it sounds like maybe we've overdone on that now.
Well,
so I don't know if there's a... We did put a French drain in this when we did it. We put the rocks underneath, and but if this tree doesn't make it, you know, or do you have any advice for what to do to plant a tree in soil like that?
Well, typically when you have a clay type soil or a poorly drained soil, we typically suggest that you don't plant the tree too deeply. That's important. We would suggest that when you plant a bald and burlap tree, that you measure the height of the soil ball first. And then you dig a hole that's about two-thirds the height of that soil ball. So if you have an 18-inch high soil ball, you're going to dig a hole 12 inches deep. And so you're going to plant fairly high. That's much better if you're dealing with a clay soil. You don't want to get it too deep. So make sure that when you're planting in a difficult soil like a clay soil or a poorly drained soil that you plant high, not too deep. And I would also dig a very wide hole, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because when you put the soil back, it's going to be loose for a while, allowing the roots to grow much better than if you have compacted soil.
Okay.
And then I would choose trees that maybe are more tolerant of clay-type soils, things like honey locust, linden, crab apples, that type of thing, trees that are pretty tolerant.
Okay, great. Well, hopefully this one will make it and we won't have to do that. But
okay.
I appreciate your guidance.
All right. Good luck, Sarah. Thank you so much for your call. You know, Richard, is there any way to tell, and Laura, you know, is there any way to tell if you're overwatering or underwatering a tree? Because they seem to, you know, kind of have the same characteristics either way. Are there any signs?
Well, what I would do as far as watering is I would just go out there and with your eyes and your finger, just kind of poke around, see if the ground is getting dry. Just don't automatically do it every 4 or 5 days. Go out there and see if the actual soil is getting dry. And if it is, then I would go ahead and water.
It's Horticulture Day today on Talk of Iowa, and you can join our conversation as well with your plant questions and tree questions. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk, send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org, and you can also post to our Facebook page. Again, the number to call is 866-780-9100. We have this question via email from John in Marion. He writes, I have a bur oak tree about the diameter of a thick baseball bat. 2 years ago, a buck deer scraped the bark off the base of the tree, about 3/4 around and about 2 feet tall. The bark is coming back on one side. The tree is adding branches and leaves and is sprouting from the base. Will the tree survive long term?
Boy, that's difficult. If they have damaged the bark on, let's say, 3/4 of the trunk, I'm rather... dubious as far as it surviving long term. Just because there's so much exposed wood, it's going to take a long time for that to heal over. And in the meantime, you may get a wood rot or something that invades that open wound. So it's not a very good situation, no.
Mm. All right. This next call comes from Aaron in Muscatine. Hello, Aaron.
Hi there. I have three bushes in my yard this year, ranging from 3 foot high to about 5 foot high, that started out the spring completely bare. And I know a horticulturist probably doesn't want to hear this, but they're not super nice bushes or you know, unique or noticeable. I don't know what type of plants they are, but they're, you know, fairly mature shrubs in my yard, and so I want to save them if I can. So they started out the spring bare, and now in the last month or so have developed a couple of areas where there's some green foliage, but very, very sparse. You know, there's a pocket of green foliage.
Okay.
And so I'm wondering, should I just get rid of them or should I prune them and then let them, you know, re-sprout from the ground up? And how should I deal with these?
Well, these areas are green. Are they on existing stems or coming up from the ground, from the base?
No, these are up on the existing stems. And okay. And it's only a couple of spots, but in the spots where it's green, there's a considerable amount of greenery.
Okay.
A handful of green, you know.
So when you look at the plant in whole, percentage-wise, how much is leafing out? 25%,
50%? Oh, goodness, no. Maybe 5.
Okay.
5%.
With 5%, I think I would remove the plants, just because 95% dead, 5% alive, I think it's unrealistic to expect them to recover fully, so I would replant, I think.
Do you have any ideas?
Plant something new, more memorable there, I think.
Yeah, I was going to say, what are you going to plan to put in there in their place?
Just some
fun plant.
Okay, just make sure that they're suitable for the site as far as sun and shade and right size, and you should have quite a few choices.
All right, we'll call back.
So
let
much.
Us know how it goes, Aaron. Thanks for your
Will
call.
Will do, thanks.
It's Horticulture Day today. With me, our guest entomologist, Laura Jesse of the Iowa State Plant and Insect Diagnostic Clinic, and Richard Durana, horticulturist at Iowa State. Join our conversation at 866-780-9100. Email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And you can join us on social media. Tweet us at IPR Talk or post to our Facebook page. We'll be back in just a minute. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. It's Horticulture Day today on Talk of Iowa. I'm Emily Woodbury, sitting in for host Charity Nebbe. And I'm joined by entomologist Laura Jesse of the Plant and Insect Diagnostic Clinic at Iowa State and Richard Duran, an Iowa State University Extension horticulturist. And this hour, we're tackling a lot of questions. Consider this the ER for all your trees and plants, tackling some hard questions here. Elizabeth writes in, I have a small cherry tree, tart pie cherries, maybe 8 to 10 years old. Last year, there were many cherries. This year, less so. Now the branches are oozing sap. What could be causing this?
Again, this similar to the caller earlier, this is called gamosis, and it's definitely a sign of stress. But what has caused that stress? We don't know. You know, in some trees, people will tell me they've just kind of done this forever, and it's not, you know, been a big problem for the health. You know, overall, if the canopy is still okay and that looks fine, I wouldn't be too concerned. There's nothing to do about this kind of gamosis, this weeping of sap. But it is something to keep an eye out for and see, because it does indicate that there might be some sort of stress going on.
Mm. And Laura, if Elizabeth wanted to send something into the plant diagnostic clinic, what would you suggest she send in? The cherries, the branches?
Definitely ripe cherries, well packaged. Kidding. So some of the branches would help us. Then we can check for any insect damage or cankers. So, you know, unfortunately, a lot of times I see these on trees, it's in trunk or the main branch. So if that's the case, we definitely don't want you, you know, cutting down the tree to send us a sample. You know, we're happy to look at a picture, and you can email us pictures at pidc@iastate.edu. And, you know, like, let us get a look at it, and then we can decide, you know, what sort of sample might be good.
Okay. We have this email also from Caroline in Spencer. She writes that for the third year in a row, I'm having problems with earwig infestation on my, and you're going to have to help me with pronunciation here, Calibrachoa?
Yeah. A petunia-like plant.
A petunia-like plant. Okay, perfect.
Thank you, Richard.
She says she's moved locations, resorted to insecticide. Are these plants just particularly susceptible to earwigs?
So it's hard. Probably not. And earwigs are pretty generalist. They tend to like wetness. And we've actually had way fewer earwigs this year than I can recall for the past few years. So the big thing is to reduce wetness as much as you can. Mulch, if these are happen to be potted plants, you know, getting it up off the ground, making sure there's no, you know, they just love to hide under containers and things like that. So reducing any moisture around the plants is probably the best option.
Okay. All right, well, let's get to the phones. We have a lot of people on the line. Up first is Greg in Des Moines. Hi, Greg.
Hi.
How are you doing today?
Good. I have a maple in the front yard about 25 feet tall that I planted because of some ash that were dying, and I took the ash down, waiting for it to start growing, and it's been in about 3 seasons now, and suddenly in the last month, intermittent branches are turning brown and dropping off. I first thought it might have been the wind just breaking some branches, but now it continues. It's probably 5% of the leaves on the tree.
Okay.
I'm not sure what's the...
How big are the branches that are falling?
Probably they're small. They're maybe 6 inches, just little new sprouts. So the main branches are okay. It's just the littler branches that the leaves are on.
One possibility would be squirrels. Squirrels love to chew off branches. They're typically small. And if you examine the end where they've been chewed off or broke off, you can actually see where they've been chewed. It typically is at an angle if it's a squirrel, but they love to do that. So that would be one possibility, squirrels.
And the other possibility, if you had periodical cicadas in your area earlier this year, which you would definitely have noticed if you had them, the egg laying, the female, she kind of scars the branch. And so we're getting a lot of phone calls about kind of, you know, what you're describing, kind of all around the tree, kind of these smaller branches dying.
That's what the neighbors said. They thought it might be the cicadas. Is there anything I should do, or will it heal on its own?
Nope, it will heal on its own. It only happens once every 17 years. And you can actually look at the branch. You'll see she kind of lays her eggs, and it'll be like maybe a quarter inch little scar, and then there'll be a whole little line of them. And if you take your pocket knife and cut in, the eggs are, you know, a little bit smaller than a grain of rice, but usually you can kind of see these little white eggs in there. And so the nymphs will all come out and fall into the ground, and we won't have to worry about it again for quite a while.
That sounds like it. Nice diagnosis. I'm reassured.
Thanks, Greg. So, Laura, does that mean he's going to have this again in 17 years? Do they keep laying in the same trees?
Yes. So, you know, the areas where the cicadas are, that's very, very long term, over hundreds of years. They don't move around a whole lot. So it tends to be the older wooded areas in Iowa along old rivers and things like that. So he's very lucky. I wish I had them in my yard.
Consider yourself lucky for cicadas. Up next is Allison Ames. Good morning, Alice.
Good morning.
What's your question?
Well, we're raising potatoes, and we also are raising baby chickens. And my husband took the wood bedding, the wood shavings from the chicken coop and put them on our potato patch about a month ago. And I just want to know if it's okay to eat our potatoes. I'm concerned that it didn't get put on the compost pile, that, you know, whether it's safe to eat the potatoes.
Yeah, that's a difficult question. I guess that I would say yes, but they should be thoroughly washed. They should be peeled and cooked thoroughly.
Okay.
And that should take care of anything that might be in the manure. Make sure they're peeled and cooked thoroughly.
Okay.
All right. Write us back and tell us if you're all right. Cook them well.
All right. Well, Thanks. He was instructed to put it on the compost pile from now on, so it won't be an upcoming problem, but we need to know if we can eat these potatoes, so thank you.
All right. Good luck, Alice. Up next is Will in Iowa City. Hi, Will.
Hi there. My question is about grass. Earlier this year, probably April or May, I planted probably 100 pounds of grass seed in some places established and other places bare ground. The grass uniformly came up beautifully, and it looked like carpeting. It looked like fabric. It was just so thick and lush and wonderful. We had two storms about a month ago, about a week apart. Got busy with down trees and didn't have to worry about watering because of the amount of rain that fell. But when I got back and thought it might be time to water again, there were areas that were completely gone. 98% of the grass no longer there. My thought is maybe it was washed out by the heavy rain over the course of 2 days. My question is, the grass came up so well in this fairly shaded area. Is it worth planting again, maybe next year or later this year? Or the fact that it's, you know, 98% gone, is that a sign that I'm just wasting grass seed?
Well, I'm not sure what happened to the grass, but
me either.
If it's shady, if it's a shady area, the first thing I would do would be to go to my garden center and see if they have a shady lawn mix.
And that is what I planted.
Okay. And specifically, I want to find a mix that is largely composed of the fine leaf fescues, things like creeping red fescue, hard fescue, chewings fescue, because they're the most shade tolerant. There can be maybe some bluegrass in there, maybe some perennial rye, but I want this mix to be at least 60% of these fine leaf fescues, because they're the ones that are going to take over. And I would be shooting for a late August sowing date. And if you have a large area, one way of doing that is to core aerate the yard where you pull out plugs of soil.
Did that.
And go over the yard three or four times, make a lot of holes, okay? And then sow your grass seed and then drag something across the lawn like a piece of fencing or a drag mat, and that basically breaks up the soil cores and also works the seed into the soil, okay? And then, after that, try to keep the seed bed moist, and hopefully you'll get some grass coming up within a few days.
All right.
Well, that's what happened last time, and it was so beautiful.
Right.
I'm wondering if, given that the grass is gone now, is that a sign that perhaps that's just not an area that... maybe the quality of the soil, where there has never been grass, maybe it's futile.
Well, it can be, but if you do it in late summer, then you're going to have fall, which should provide ideal growing conditions for the grass. Okay, you'll also have ideal growing conditions next spring, so they'll have a pretty long period for that to grow and get established. If it's going to survive, it will survive after that. If this doesn't survive next year, then I would look at maybe a ground cover or something else, because apparently the site is so difficult, this will not grow.
All right. Up next is Jerry in Fort Dodge. Jerry, thanks for holding. What's your question?
Good morning. I have a maple tree. It's about 20 feet tall. About 2 years ago, I noticed that there was a dead branch in the top main, and since then the canopy is probably 50% less. I can actually see the branches of the trees just standing back looking at it. Is there something I can do about that, or am I totally losing it?
So you're saying that 50% of the canopy is now dead?
It's just not there. It didn't fill out in the spring.
It didn't leaf out?
It did not leaf out, no.
Okay. Well, I would say if 50% of the canopy is basically bare, hasn't leafed out, it's dead. And I would say that tree probably is not going to recover, and I would be inclined to replace it, unfortunately.
Okay. I placed a perennial bed near it, included it on the end. Did that have some problem? Did it cause some damage to it?
It may have caused some minor damage, but that didn't cause the death of the tree. So something else is wrong. I think that would have been very minor. But I'm not sure exactly what it is. But if you have a tree that's 50% dead, I think it's unrealistic to expect it to recover. So I would replace it, I think.
And a lot of maple tree calls today. Maple trees are having a tough time this summer.
Well, I would say the last two or three years have been kind of rough on some of those trees. We had two very dry summers in a row. Then we had a brutal winter where we had very cold temperatures, both air temperatures and soil temperatures. And some of the trees just didn't tolerate it very well.
Up next is Russ calling from Des Moines. Hi, Russ.
Yes. I'm calling about a couple of flowering crab trees that I have. And the leaves are somewhat sparse. They've been that way for a couple of years, maybe 60% of what I'd like to see for leaves and some dead limbs and there are some holes on the trees that I'm told is from woodpeckers, and one diagnosis was that I probably have sort of a disease or fungus, and I'm just wondering if you have some advice for me.
Well, the holes, are they in a line, either vertical or horizontal?
Yes.
Then that would be a sapsucker. Very common on basically crab apples, apples, maples, and some pine trees. And they're very methodical, so you see the holes in a line. If they were insects, they would be totally random. And basically the sapsuckers are after the sap that oozes out when they make that hole. So typically they don't cause that much damage. As far as the leaves, do they develop leaves and then lose them, possibly?
Yeah, there's some of that. It was a little fuller, the leafage, you know, a month or two ago.
So I'm guessing that they probably have apple scab, too. Apple scab is a very common fungal disease. You see spotting of the foliage, the leaves turn yellow, they fall off. And certain varieties are very susceptible to apple scab. Other varieties are resistant. But the weather this spring has been favorable for apple scab. And if you have a variety susceptible to it, you can lose maybe half your foliage by midsummer very easily. So there's probably not much you can do. If you wanted to control that, you would have to spray probably three or four times in the spring as the tree is leafing out. For most people, that's not very practical, but you could do that, and that might prevent that. But you'd also have to do it every year, too. So most people don't. But if you buy a crabapple, make sure you're buying a variety or cultivar that is apple scab resistant. Many are, and that's the way to go.
Thanks for your call, Russ. Let's see if we can squeeze in one or two more questions before the end of the hour. Hi, Bernie in Dubuque. How are you?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. My wife has a plant, and it's called a Me Too or a Mizu. And it's a succulent plant that with variegated leaves, and it gets a little red flower at the end of it. And it looks like it has some kind of a small brown scale on the stalks of the plant, and the only way you can get rid of them is by scratching them off. And I'm kind of wondering what kind of a we tried a topical poison, didn't work. How would you advise me to proceed?
Okay, and this is a houseplant indoors or outdoors?
It's both, but right now during the summer, it's just growing wonderfully outdoors.
Okay, and that's the best thing for it. So it does sound like you have scale insects. And I can say, and anyone who's dealt with scale insects on houseplants, it's not easy. It's lots of persistence. The trouble is that scale that you see, and actually scraping them off is a very good control. So if it's small enough and you can physically remove as many, and those are the female scales, as you can, the only controls for like the topical insecticide will only kill the crawlers, so the young scales that have just hatched from eggs. Those larger scales, they're completely protected from the insecticide, so it usually takes repeated treatments, you know, every few weeks, every month, persistence. Oftentimes, for many plants, it's kind of persistent. You put them out in the summer, they get healthy, they do well, and then you think you've kind of beaten them, and then by about February or March, the plant's stressed, and you start to notice that there still are scale insects on it. So,
thanks for all your great calls and questions today. Another great horticulture day. Now time to go enjoy the weekend. I want to thank my guests, Laura Jesse, entomologist of the Plant and Insect Diagnostic Clinic at Iowa State. Thanks, Laura.
Thank you.
And Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist. As always, thanks for joining us, Richard.
You're welcome.
Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Lindsay Moon, and Claire Roth. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from Jason Burns in Ames. We always welcome your comments and questions about this show. Contact us anytime at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I'm Emily Woodbury. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.